Let us join in a spirit of prayer. Spirit of life and love, God of many names, our hearts go out to all those who are suffering, all those who are alone this holiday season, all those who do not have enough to keep warm, safe, or enough to eat. We yearn to end their suffering and to offer comfort. At this time, when the world turns deeper into darkness, we shift from a season of gratitude to the season of generosity and anticipation. May our generosity provide relief and lift spirits this holiday season. May love guide us and take us where we need to go. In sorrow or in joy, may love be our guide. Let us hold this moment in silence. So may it be, and amen.
Our reading this morning is entitled, We, the Peoples of the United Nations, which is found in our hymnal, Singing the Living Tradition, reading number 475. We, the Peoples of the United Nations, determined to save succeeding generations from the scourge of war, to reaffirm faith in fundamental human rights, in the dignity and worth of the human person, in the equal rights of men and women and of nations large and small, to promote social progress and better standards of life in larger freedom, and for these ends to practice tolerance and to live together in peace as good neighbors, to unite our strength to maintain international peace and security, to ensure that armed force shall not be used save in the common interest, to employ international machinery in the promotion of the economic and social advancement of all people, have resolved to combine our efforts to accomplish these aims.
A few days ago, I met Dr. Jennifer Welsh, the United Nations Secretary General's newly appointed special advisor on the responsibility to protect. She's also a professor of international relations at Oxford University and co-director of the Oxford Institute for Ethics, Law, and Armed Conflict. She began the meeting by explaining that the doctrine of responsibility to protect was devised by a former Canadian government in response to the genocide in Rwanda. Dr. Walsh's office not only works to stop genocide and crimes against humanity, but works to prevent them before they happen in the first place. When Dr. Walsh had concluded her remarks, I told her that I had a controversial question to ask her. I referred to Adolf Hitler, who stated quite clearly that he intended to rid Germany of its Jewish population. Along the way, there were many chances for the international community to stop the implementation of Hitler's plan for genocide that were ignored. We have vowed not to let this ever happen again. Today, there are national leaders who vow to rid their country of all homosexuals in their respective countries. They're putting laws into place to begin this process just as Hitler did. I mentioned that I realized that sexual orientation and gender identity were not explicitly covered in the International Genocide Conventions, but the warning signs are clear, and I asked what the international community was going to do about it. Dr. Walsh responded that nobody had ever asked this question to her before. She thanked me for my question, and she said that my question does come under her mandate because her office wants to prevent crimes against humanity. She said that she would certainly think about my question and devise plans to integrate it into her work. And I smiled and thought to myself, this is why I'm at the United Nations. It still amazes me that questions about sexual orientation and gender identity, human rights, have not been talked about. For many people, I'm the first person to ask these questions to high-ranking UN leaders. This has happened repeatedly to me since my tenure began on January 1st, 2008. These questions have changed the United Nations from apathy concerning sexual orientation and gender identity, human rights, to total engagement on the issue. Today, we ask why women's health and welfare are being neglected. Why so little is being done about climate change? We ask about migrant rights and those of the globe's indigenous peoples and more. I'm really delighted to be here today with you. I thank you so much for your very warm hospitality. Montclair is a very key congregation in the network that supports the UUUNO. Scott Seal here is a member of our very important advisory board, and many others here are very good friends and have taught me and mentored me a great deal. I'm a Star Trek fan, and I wanted to explore the universe. The best I could manage was to explore our own planet. Given my life and career, I've become a citizen of the world, so the United Nations is the right place for me to work. I ask you to consider for a moment what our purpose as Unitarian Universalists is. Evangelical Christians say that their purpose is to save souls for Jesus. Do we also have a saving purpose? I believe we do. While some religions preach about life after death, we are certain of it. We know for certainty when we die, life will continue and it will suffer and or benefit from what we do. Existence that will live beyond our death will cope with the environment and climate that we leave it. People who come after us will enjoy the freedoms and rights that we have established and protected, or the lack thereof. Children born today and the years to come will enjoy equality or suffer inequality depending on what we leave them. They will enjoy a healthy environment and good health care or not, depending on what we do now and in the years to come. I've heard a story of when Ralph Waldo Emerson was dying, people asked him if he believed he would go to heaven or hell. His reported reply was that he wasn't finished with life yet, and he'd worry about what happens later when that time came. That's a very Unitarian answer. While we plan for future generations, we live and work in the present. So living and working in the present as we do, do we have a saving purpose to play? I believe we do. I've had a lifelong compulsion to find my purpose in my life. It has never been enough for me to go to work and enjoy my life without finding that my life filled a certain purpose, a larger purpose. We are in the business of saving lives. The opportunity to save a life is a rare chance that doesn't come often in one's life. Gays and lesbians today are put to death by 7 governments and imprisoned by 76. And in much of the rest of the world, death and oppression awaits those who do not conform to majority norms of sexual orientation and gender identity. Americans, who seem never to hear about what goes on at the United Nations, were astounded to hear Hillary Clinton say that gay rights were human rights on Human Rights Day, December 10, 2011. However, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon had said much the same thing a full year before Hillary's speech, and the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights had begun her advocacy for sexual orientation, gender identity, human rights, even earlier than that. It was, in fact, the change in the United Nations attitude towards sexual orientation and gender identity, human rights, which influenced the attitude of the United States government and not the other way around. It was the UUUNO that started the ball rolling at the United Nations in 2008 with our persistent and patient advocacy for sexual orientation, gender identity, human rights, and our ability to get these rights onto the agenda of the UN Human Rights Conference in Paris in 2008 to commemorate the 60th anniversary of the signing of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. This prompted the government of France, in its capacity as the European Union president, to introduce an initiative at the UN General Assembly, which happened on December 18, 2008. We've kept the ball rolling until the world now sees the UN as the world's foremost advocate for sexual orientation and gender identity human rights, as they are indeed the foremost advocate for all human rights, including the important human right to peace and the human right to sustainable development, which will preserve the life-giving properties of our planet for future generations. This is another life that is very near and dear to me. He's a very dear friend. His name is Imam Babali, and he's the only independent Muslim imam in the small African country of the Gambia. All of the rest of the Muslim imams and Christian ministers are in the pocket of the dictator Yahya Jammeh. I've known Imam Lee since I was deputy chief of mission at the American Embassy in the Gambia in 2003, so about 10 years. When the dictator, President Yahya Jammeh, started executing every person on death row, Imam Lee started preaching against the death penalty. On December 5th, 2012, he was taken away by the Gambian National Intelligence Agency, and he was tortured for 6 months. I leapt into action, and I contacted Amnesty International, the U.S. Department of State, the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, and more. My efforts and those of other of Babali's many friends paid off in May this year, and Babali was released. He is now safe with us here in America. Amnesty International and I nominated him for the African Human Rights Defender of the Year Award, which he won last month. The UUUNO has achieved amazing success in the area of sexual orientation and gender identity human rights, which has made it a powerful leader at the UN with leading roles on all of the non-governmental organizations, which is abbreviated as NGO, the NGO Committee for Human Rights, which I chair, the NGO Committee for Disarmament, Peace, and Security, which I also lead. I also chair the Faith and Ethics Network for the International Criminal Court, and we play leading roles on the NGO Committee for Sustainable Development, the NGO Committee on Migration, the NGO Security Council Working Group, and the NGO Committee on UNICEF. We work for the empowerment of women and save lives of AIDS orphans in Africa with our Every Child is Our Child program. We empower the women of the community to ensure that about 100 of the 3,000 AIDS orphans in the country get basic health care and education. We are determined to address the deteriorating condition of women and women's health around the world. We raise awareness of the deplorable neglect and abuse of women, including the trafficking of women around the world. We are bringing to light the terrible secret agony around the world of women around the world whose stories go largely untold and whose plight goes largely unnoticed. Women's empowerment was the topic of our 2011 spring seminar. If you're missing our seminars, you're missing some of the best programming on these issues that are available anywhere. We discuss issues and trends in depth in ways that you will not see on the news. These discussions are led by the very people involved in the unfolding history of human rights and protecting our ability, of our planet's ability to sustain life. Support your youth to go to the 2014 spring seminar. This year, we looked at LGBT rights. The highlight of the seminar was an interfaith panel which brought together the perspectives of several faith traditions: Hinduism, Islam, Orthodox Judaism, Protestantism, and Unitarian Universalism. This panel challenged the Orthodox homophobia in all of these religions with a fresh look at sacred text and the prevailing thinking of the religious world. We plan to do even more next year with a seminar on the rights of indigenous peoples. Our keynote speakers will be UUA President Reverend Peter Morales and Canadian Unitarian Council Executive Director Vita Ng. We have confirmed Juan de Dios Garcia, who's a prominent Mayan activist in Guatemala, as a principal speaker. We are working on obtaining world-class First Nations speakers from Canada, Native American speakers from the United States, and Indigenous speakers from around the world. We plan to have Indigenous entertainment, art, and music, and unique artifacts for sale. Some things in life are not to be missed, and this seminar is one of those experiences that you should not let yourself forgo. The dates of the seminar are April 3rd through the 5th, 2014, so some chances only come once in a lifetime. Don't miss this seminar. It's going to be great. I don't often talk about our internship program, but I need to do more because our interns are really amazing. We have created an intern program unlike any other. Most interns are told to compile lists and stuff envelopes and clean up the work area. Our interns develop programs, participate in important UN meetings, ask questions, and provoke discussion. Our interns go on to advanced studies in international development, law, and policy, and get jobs at the World Bank or start their own nonprofits or practice human rights law. We have agreements with Fordham, Columbia, NYU Graduate Schools of Social Work to provide the UUUNO with their best students. We have just completed an agreement with Union Theological Seminary to provide the UUUNO with a UU seminarian each academic year. We have our first interns from Hunter College and from the New Brunswick Theological Seminary. Tomorrow's leaders are learning their craft at the UUUNO's internship program today. We also have amazing volunteers who join in our efforts to create a better world. They give of their time and talents to make our small office far more effective in creating positive global change than we could possibly do with our very small staff. We achieve these great things because of their amazing service. We lead where others have not been able to lead before. We save lives and we make sure that those who live after us will live in a better world. Finally, all of our work to establish human rights and provide experiential training for new leaders will be for naught if our planet ceases to provide us with what we need to live. We are in the process of making our planet incapable of sustaining life, and we must take drastic steps to reverse this process to mitigate the damage already done. We can take some of those steps in our sanctuaries and in our homes, but to be effective, we have to act globally. And that means working with the United Nations and ensuring that the United States leads on this important issue. The latest UN conference on climate change happened in Warsaw this month, and there was a UUUNO volunteer at that conference. She expressed a great deal of frustration, as did many other in civil society, with how little world governments were doing. And we need to do much more to push our government to take a leadership role in this issue. Our government more often than not goes to these conferences and frustrates progress forward. And instead of frustrating progress forward, we need to lead progress forward. This is a life and death issue, and we cannot sit back and do nothing. To make this happen, to make sure that we do our part, we are forming climate change action teams, climate action teams and congregations to learn about climate change and to institute campaigns to ensure that our energy needs are supplied in sustainable ways. We are doing this work in collaboration with the UU Ministry for Earth, the Green Sanctuary Movement, Ethical Eating Program, UUSC, and all UU programs that are working together on climate change and for environmental justice. And I have brochures. They're in the back. You can get one of these brochures. And I will tell you all about this program. And I urge this congregation to form a climate action team and get active on this critical issue. Someone has called the UUUNO the UU issue factory. Gillian Sorensen said that the UUUNO punches far above its weight. We are leading where no one has led before. We meet the top leaders, at the UN, people like the High Commissioner for Human Rights, the President of the Human Rights Council, the ambassadors of all of the member states of the UN Security Council, and senior diplomats from all over the world. Our purpose is to save lives and ensure a better world for future generations. Continue your partnership with the UUUNO team as a Blue Ribbon congregation. We want to ensure that you have a UN Sunday every year. You're having one today, so you can check the box for this year. But do this every year. And make sure that this congregation remains aware of the importance of global action through the world's only truly global organization, the United Nations. Your congregation needs to maintain its wonderfully active envoy link with our office, which you're doing, but keep up the good work. We ask that this congregation to continue to make an annual contribution to the work of the UUUNO, which you've done this year, but keep it up. And I need 5% of this congregation to be individual donors, to fill out a donor card and become an individual donor to the UUUNO. Just 5% of this congregation. And the brochures are in the back when you go out. Of course, we want generous donations, but generous can mean different things for different people. Mostly, it's important to get involved. Please take some of our literature, and I've got a whole bunch in the back there. Take a look at what we're doing. Take some literature and find ways to get involved. It's part of our spiritual purpose to work to improve our locality, our nation, and the world. Our locality, nation, and the planet are interconnected, and to neglect any part of this web damages every part of existence. Our work is deeply rooted in our faith and our values. It's our faith that powers our amazingly successful and effective work on the world stage. There is no better way to get connected to the world than through the UUUNO's work at the United Nations. Join our work and do what UUs always do. Lead where no one has led before. Save lives. Give future generations a world that promotes the inherent worth and dignity of everyone, everywhere, and sustains the web of life of which we are part. Amen, and thank you. If here you have found freedom, take it with you into the world. If you have found comfort, go and share it with others. If you have dreamed dreams, help one another that they may come true. And if you have known love, give some back to a bruised and hurting world. Go in peace.